So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 25. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Darth Maul. As always, I'm Mike B, joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello everyone.
And this week we have Martin from Frightfully Uninformed Podcast. Hey Martin.
Howdy.
As always, if you guys want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. So welcome, everyone. How you all doing today?
Pretty good. Yeah. It's been a fairly uneventful week, all in. I did see Suicide Squad, so
I did too.
A thing. Mm-hmm.
I think we all saw it, so yeah, it's not bad.
It wasn't Batman versus Superman. I mean, that's kind of a tick in its favor.
Yeah, that's really odd. From everyone who saw it, I heard that it wasn't as bad, and yet the Rotten Tomatoes rating is 1% below Batman v Superman. So I don't know what to make of that.
This is not the Suicide Squad podcast or the Batman vs. Superman podcast, but I did see it last night too. So we'll move on from that tidbit of information. So we do have some merch for sale on our website, guys. So feel free to check that out at resistanceradio.net. We do have t-shirts and buttons available. You can order them there. They're pretty snazzy. I myself am a fan of the t-shirt. I wear it more often than I probably should, but I like it. Danya, you like your t-shirt?
Yeah, of course I do. I wear it maybe not as often as you do. I cycle through all my different shirts, but I do wear it quite a lot. It's really comfortable.
It is. All right. Well, as always, we do have our brand new host, first time on the show, Martin. So, Martin, why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with Star Wars?
Well, unlike most of the guests that you seem to have, I pretty much was completely oblivious to Star Wars growing up. In sixth grade, a friend of mine was totally incensed by the fact that I've never seen it, so he kind of forced me to watch it. And you know, when you're forced to watch something, you know how you react, right? Not good. So, for the longest time, I was just kind of oblivious, kind of whatever about it. My friend got really pissed because I was pretty much making fun of it the whole time. But it wasn't until years later, after the prequels came out, that I actually revisited the whole series and watched them in the production order, not the numbered order, George Lucas.
And, yeah, I like that production order. It's probably a little bit better order to introduce yourself to them.
Yeah, the numbered order makes no sense when you're watching it, because it there's so much of what's in the universe depends on your familiarity with it. Anyway, it was at that point where I actually started to, like, understand it a little more and kind of form an opinion about it. And, you know, and here I am today. I've seen all 7 movies, and some of them more than once. And actually 8 movies, because I watched the Clone Wars movie.
Ah, yes. That wonderful Clone Wars movie that I think I talked about how there was like 30 people at the theater when I went to go see it. So
yeah,
that was interesting.
That's the one. There were only 2 people in my living room when I watched on Netflix, but
well, you know, that's something.
Still, we had some cosplayers, so it was not bad.
There you go. That's fun. All right. Well, welcome, Martin. And you're from Frightfully Uninformed Podcast, correct?
Yes. I host a podcast with my co-host, Melinda. We focus on horror movies. So every episode, we watch a new horror movie and kind of analyze it, talk a little bit about the themes and its contribution to the horror movie history and whatnot. We took a bit of a hiatus, but we're coming back soon, so new episodes will be coming out shortly.
Awesome. Well, that's great, and any of you guys who want to know a little bit more about Martin's history with me, he used to be my roommate, so I can pick on him for a lot of different things. Anyway, I'm going to move right into the news, so that way he doesn't get a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, let's not get into that.
I bet he's got all of the dirt on you as well, Mikey. I'm going to be mining him for all of that information.
He's got more than I'd probably like to admit. Anyway, first bit of news Hey, first bit of news here. This is kind of cool. Star Wars The Force Awakens 4-disc Collector's 3D Edition is available November 15th. We knew it was coming at some point. But yeah, now you guys can get another copy of The Force Awakens, the 3D edition, collector's edition. It's a 4-disc collector's, and it's going to have all the same stuff that we have before, plus more deleted scenes, looks at specifically sound and costume design. It also looks like it has all the stuff that came from like the special target edition, like the scavenger and the stormtrooper, the 15-minute one, and then also the special Disney exclusive version, the droid one that had JBL that we gave a code out to get. So that's kind of cool that they're going to have all this extra stuff, and of course it's going to be in 3D.
Yeah, it's going to require... Is it going to require a 3D TV, though?
Yeah, so Blu-ray 3D does require a 3D TV. So I conveniently have a 3D TV at home. I've watched two things on it. I've watched Avatar and something else in 3D, and the rest of the time it's like, Nightmare Before Christmas in 3D. That's the other 3D movie I have. So yeah, so that's it. But you know what? It has new material. It's a collector's edition. It will probably be on my Christmas list. Maybe. I don't know. It's another copy of the same movie I have twice already.
I don't have a 3D TV. As much as I absolutely love the cover of this, by the way, I think it's really cool. But
oh, it's awesome.
It is, and I like the idea of maybe getting to see a couple of extra deleted scenes, mostly out of curiosity of like other stuff that they've cut out, rather than, you know, the necessity of thinking, did it need to be in the movie or not? But do I want to get another version when I can't watch one of the versions of it?
How horrible would it be if the scenes they cut out, the deleted scenes, were in 3D also, and you can't even watch that because you don't have a 3D TV? It'll be all this blurry mess.
That would be the worst. That would be the worst thing.
Although I do want to talk a little bit about the cover art. So I'm assuming you're all looking at this right now.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of the original Star Wars A New Hope poster with the lightsaber kind of sticking up. You know, Luke holding the lightsaber over his head with Leia kind of leaning against him with her blaster and everyone, you know, that original poster. It reminds me of it just because that lightsaber is facing straight up. What do you guys think of this poster here?
I love it. I'm completely in love with this cover. I wish it didn't have, like, the kind of frame around the outside. I don't know. There's something about that that just seems a little bit
off,
cheap looking to me. But if the image went all the way to the edge and it was like, I don't know, kind of shiny, holographic, kind of glossy on the front when you get it, because you can't tell in this image whether it will be or not.
It almost looks like, because of that edging, if it's going to be like one of those collector tins, like a 4-disc collector tin type thing, the one that was like at Best Buy that came out. So it looks pretty cool. And the only thing I will say is I don't like the text they have there, where it says Star Wars The Force Awakens 3D. It looks like it was just like plopped on, like...
Well, yeah. It was like, just plopped on.
It was. It's like, hey, I'm learning Photoshop. I'm going to throw the logo and some text in 3D here, you know. But I will say the framing of the shot just looks amazing. You know, and for those who can't see it and aren't going to click on a link to go to it, it's a picture of the forest that Kylo Ren and Rey fight at the end. And it's literally a picture of Luke's lightsaber being held, what I'm assuming is Rey's hand.
That's Rey's hand.
Yeah. And it's ignited, and it's very reminiscent of the original Star Wars poster, or even like maybe... Actually, it almost is reminiscent of all the posters that they created, because if you're looking at it, the lightsaber's on the left-hand side, which that reminds me of kind of like where Rey's staff used to be held in the promotional posters. Do you remember how they were all kind of like on the left-hand side, and you had like Han Solo's blaster there, and, you know, Kylo Ren's saber going up and everything?
Yeah, no, I'm really fond of this image just in general. I kind of would also kind of like it without, like, as a poster, but without the 3D on it.
As an iPhone wallpaper, I like it.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this image, and you notice that the border has got this beveled edge on it. And I was just thinking it'd be really cool if that piece slid out, you know, and the text and the border were on a separate cover.
Ooh, yeah, like the black is just purely a like a slipcover type thing.
Exactly. I don't know. That'd do they do packaging like that for Lucasfilms?
You know, there's so many different packagings for the different Star Wars films over the years. Who knows what they'll do? Because now it's also Disney, and Disney's had a lot of different packaging for all their Blu-rays for Pixar films and the Disney films, the Diamond Edition, the Ultimate Platinum Edition. And, man, we're going to get those all with Star Wars, huh? Because we're going to have the Collector's Edition, and then, like, in 3 years, we're going to get, like, the Platinum Diamond Edition. Man, Disney, you're going to make me go poor. Anyway.
The Platinum Diamond Edition will probably include the original three theatrical cuts, so I'm holding out hope.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. From both Hypable and Slash Gear and a bunch of other places are talking about, it looks like Star Wars live-action TV show may be in the works. There's a lot of different places that are talking about it, and it looks like the president of NBC is saying that they would love to have this, and they are having conversations with Lucasfilm already. What do you guys think about a live-action TV show on ABC? Kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something.
I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., as much as I enjoy watching it, is very hit-and-miss quality style sometimes. So I would hope that it would be a little bit more consistent if it was to move forward. Especially because ABC doesn't always have the best track record for me. But I don't hate the idea of having a Star Wars live action series, mostly because it gives you a lot more time to explore characters and places and so on if you're going to dive into it, because you're going to have more time every week. You're going to have a higher number of, like, episodes, which means more hours dedicated to it. So there's a lot of potential there for what they could do. But in the same vein, it's kind of like, well, it all depends on, like, when it's set, who it's set around, because otherwise you're gonna start treading on the toes of, like, what was going on during either the prequels or Rebels, like running in conjunction with Rebels, or you're going to be the original trilogy. So that it's difficult until, like, you figure out exactly where they'd want to set it. But, you know, Star Wars is always good.
You know, here's the thing, is a live action TV show would be absolutely awesome. I'd actually love it to be something kind of like Lost Stars almost, where they focus on characters and they're in whatever time frame they're in, and there's references to what happens, but they're completely, you know, they're not the main, you know, what we know is just happening off to the side, and it's a completely different story simply put in this universe. I can totally see, like, a, you know, think of like a Firefly type thing where it's a smuggler type, you know, thing. It's not Han Solo, but he deals with the Hutts, and maybe Jabba will make an appearance if it's before he's, you know, dead. Or, you know, they have run-ins with Dengar and IG-88 and Boba Fett, and run-ins with the Imperials. Maybe we even see, like, Agent Callus make appearance. You know, it would be really cool just to see, like, the things that we've seen in other things, but it'd be completely separate. Just because I don't want people to get Jedi fatigue, as much as I would love it to be like a Jedi story. I just like lightsabers a lot, but it would be kind of fun. It would be fun to have a live action TV show. There's been a lot of great sci-fi shows over the years, and I think they can do it. I agree with you with ABC. I personally think Netflix might be the better medium for them.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. See, I got a huge problem with network television because it's exemplified. That's not a word. A perfect example is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's supposed to be in this cool universe, but they're handcuffed by the budget, you know? And then there's the imperative in network television to always keep the ball rolling. You can never develop a story. And I just think that a network television show would go nowhere and kind of look crappy. Netflix, on the other hand, would be a great avenue for them. Marvel's knocking out of the park with their Netflix shows.
Tanya, you do your hero hype. Any question? Conversation.
I would agree with that. I think it's really interesting in that I don't hate Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a show. I don't. I think it's really interesting what they do and how they explore almost the ground level Marvel universe more in the kind of style of the movies rather than the Netflix shows, because it just carries on. But at the same time, you know, you're kind of right when you say that, you know, they're kind of almost shackled into what they can and cannot do on network TV. And I'd almost like them to have more freedom to explore whatever they want to. So either I would like to see it go to some kind of pay-per-view or cable channel, just because it gives them more freedom for what they can do. So
I'm going to put this out there real quick, and this is just so people know how big of a geek I am. So I'm a big fan of Stargate, and Stargate got its start on Showtime. So, like, think of, like, Game of Thrones. Like, I'd be okay with it being on something like Netflix or even, like, an HBO or Showtime exclusive because, one, they'll have bigger budgets. They're not hampered down by pretty much commercials or anything that they have to kind of tie into it. I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's a show I regularly watch. But one of my biggest complaints is, you know, it doesn't tie into the rest of the Marvel Universe anymore. You know, when they were talking about, you know, Civil War, they asked, you know, where does Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, land? And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't know. Like, it's kind of, it literally is like, it's siloed off on its own. Like, the show responds to what happens in the MCU, you know, the bigger universe, you know, that happens in the theaters. But it doesn't take from television. Whereas we know with Star Wars, you know, Lucasfilm Story Group, they do a really good job of taking, you know, what happens in the TV shows to real life. You know, we have this with Saw Gerrera making the leap from a character in a, you know, a short story arc in Clone Wars to being referenced in books and comics to now being a character in, you know, Rogue One. So I definitely feel like if they're going to do a TV show, Lucasfilm Story Group is going to make sure that it does a good job of tying into the rest of the universe. So that's what I would hope.
That would be my biggest hope as well, is that it would be more connected than the Marvel Universe likes to think it is. So, they like to throw around that tagline, it's all connected, a lot, but in actual practice, it's not as connected as they want it, as they seem to like be applauding themselves that it is. So if it did come to be, then I would want it to tie in really nicely or really neatly with not only the movies but the Rebels TV show and some of the books as well. Wherever it would come in the timeline, I would just want it to not exist in its own sphere, which the problem that like a show like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has is that it's constantly having to put out new episodes, whereas like the movies, they're so locked down with what information they share, they can't react to stuff like that until it's too late. They can't like kind of incorporate it. And then the other way around as well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is constantly moving so quickly that even if the movies wanted to incorporate it, by the time they've put in some of the information from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has already moved on so far ahead. So you have the problem that the movies and the TV shows work at different paces, so it would be a difficult thing to coordinate to keep them all kind of interacting smoothly depending on where in a timeline they'd set it. But I don't entirely hate the idea. It would just need to be executed in the right way with the right team, I think. Possibly if they got the right people behind it, it wouldn't be, ABC wouldn't be a terrible place for it either. But again, I'd prefer it on like something like Netflix, where they have more of a chance with their budget to do something better and a little bit more freedom with what they can do.
I want Netflix just so I can binge watch all 14 hours one day.
See, there you go.
But moving on, we finally got confirmation from, unfortunately Eric's not here, but from Jimmy Smits. He is going to be in Rogue One as Bail Organa. He was talking on the talk show, The Talk, and he was asked about the rumors to whether he would appear, and he initially said no comment. But then he said, I guess you can say cameo. Can you say small part? So he has confirmed that he is going to be in there. Obviously not a main character, probably more of a cameo, small part. If anything, he'll probably be on Alderaan eventually. And we know what happens to him there.
Yes, we do.
Poor Jimmy. So, yeah, that's cool. He's in the show. We also have Star Wars Rebels has announced season 3. It will be starting on September 4th with an hour-long premiere episode. So that's pretty cool. We got a start date. Danya, you've already seen that premiere episode, haven't you?
I have already seen that premiere episode. And if anyone is still feeling a little bit restless ahead of the premiere, which is September 24th.
Did I put 4th? Yeah.
Yeah.
So September 24th. Yes. I forgot it too when I was writing up the notes. Yeah, so September 24th, not the September 4th.
Yep, so don't tune in on the 4th because there won't be an episode.
You can tune in on the 4th and be like me and just watch nothing. But
yes. So if you want some teasers as to what might be happening in that premiere when it comes around, I did actually do a teaser article on Hyperbole for some things that may or may not happen in that premiere. So I will link to it in the show notes so that if you really, really, really want to get your Rebels fix before it airs, then that's there for you. But it's a really good, solid start to the season. Like, definitely keeping up with, like, the strength of the back half of season 2, but taking it to another level again. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great.
I'm telling you, I'm just really worried about the beginning of season 3 because you told me that, you know, Ahsoka's dead and I'm just like crying on the inside.
I didn't tell you anything about Ahsoka.
I know, I'm joking. We don't know even after what? You said you saw 3 episodes?
Two episodes. So it was
she's
an
seen
hour.
2 episodes.
Yeah, it was an hour long and it was the first 2 episodes and they basically, the 2 episodes connect together. So they just showed it as one big episode. It was really good, but yes, no, we don't get confirmation about that. The crew of the Ghost believe something one way or the other, but we don't get a solid confirmation.
I wish that that's the biggest thing. I really want them to tell us, and I feel like it's going to be halfway through the season before we find out about Ahsoka. I feel anyway, that's me and my frustration with the show. I love the show. I love watching it. Anyway.
Seriously, though, I mean, some stuff that happens in the premiere episode will take precedent over what they're going to need to be worrying about.
Did they introduce Thrawn that early on?
They may or may not introduce Thrawn that early on.
Ooh. All right, moving on. Gareth Edwards talks about Jeddah in Rogue One's Jedi Mecca. So, this is pretty interesting. Gareth Edwards was talking to Entertainment Weekly, and he discussed Jeddah as the planet that is one of the 2 planets that Rogue One takes place on. And Danya, you have a great article about the 2 planets on Hypable.com.
Correct? I did, yeah.
It's just the celebration coverage.
Yes, I also, if you watched my walkthrough video, my live walkthrough video that I did of the Rogue One costume display from Star Wars Celebration, spoke a little bit about Jeddah there based on some of the comments that Gareth Edwards said during like the Rogue One panel. So I wrote it up a little bit, but I also went into a little bit more detail in that video as well, which is on our Facebook page.
I'll pin it to the top so everyone can get to it easy. So if you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/resistanceradiopodcast, like us, and then the video will be at the top by the time you guys hear this. So
So basically it's a planet that people who believe in the Force, they do like spiritual pilgrimages to it. So even though like the Jedi to the way that people believe it, they don't exist any longer. Like, people still believe in the Force and what the Force does. And Jeddah is a place that is very connected to the Force. So anyone who believes in it will make a pilgrimage to Jeddah. But then it becomes apparently very, very interesting because it's under the occupation of the Empire. So you've got these people who truly believe in the Force and are very sort of spiritual in that respect, making a pilgrimage to a place that is very dangerous to them and their beliefs and stuff like that. So it's going to be this really fascinating thing that they're going to play with in the movie. And I'm really looking forward to it because it's going to be really cool to see characters who are so strongly connected to the Force but don't use it, but still believe in it.
Yeah, I
just love this whole thing. I love it so much.
So I think just to kind of set it up, Edwards discussed that Jedha is a place, like you said, is a spiritual pilgrimage for people who believe in the Jedi, this religion. But you have to remember, in the 2 decades since Revenge of the Sith, the Empire, you know, Palpatine and Vader have literally, the Jedi are out of existence. There are no Jedi. And they've removed everything. And they've literally become like a myth. And, you know, it's like a religion at this point. The people are losing faith at the period the movie takes place in. There's not really any hard evidence. It's more legends and tales of what people remember. Because you have to remember, people who knew the Jedi back then, they were adults usually. And at this point, they're old. They're telling the story to their kids and they're growing up. So this is kind of like the Jedi. You remember Han Solo at the beginning of A New Hope. So you're telling me there's some mystical force surrounding everything. Well, there's nothing that's controlling me. You know, like, that's the whole point. Like, this is a myth at this point. So people are pilgrimaging to this planet. And so it's really interesting because they're going into a place where the Empire is there controlling it. It's an occupation. So it's a... He can't go into reasons why he can't reveal why they're there, but apparently something on Jedha serves both the Jedi and the Empire. So it could relate to either of them. So it's interesting because the article goes into a little bit further talking about what it might be. And obviously, since this is about the Death Star, and both in canon and EU, the Death Star had a giant kyber crystal, which is what makes lightsabers. So I'm almost wondering if Jedi is a pilgrimage for a lot of Jedi in the you know, heyday of the Old Republic, to go ahead and get their crystal for the lightsaber.
Which would be an amazing way to tie everything together. I would absolutely love that. If that is kind of where the pilgrimage started, and that's sort of been lost in the time where, like, the Jedi have kind of almost been assumed to be a myth because of the Empire, but that idea of a pilgrimage is something that's lingered regardless with people who still believe in the Jedi and believe in the Force, but they've forgotten
the true origins
of the pilgrimage. Like, I just love this whole idea. It's so rich in kind of lore and history and myth that it's just hitting all of the right buttons for me. I'm like, this is such a good way to take a standalone movie that fits in nicely with the rest of the Star Wars films, but also has its own unique way of standing alone, as well as bringing something new to the entire Star Wars universe. Like, it's such a nice sweet spot that they found here. If this all pans out, I'll be incredibly happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that that's what it is, but I'm just gonna wait and see. I'm really excited. We also have a new trailer coming out tomorrow, which, you know, we record on Wednesdays, and it's coming out tomorrow during the Olympics. So I'm sure we'll cover it next week and maybe post something about it as everyone sees it. So it'll be fun to see that, and that's probably gonna be the trailer that you saw in Celebration.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is very likely gonna be that trailer. I can't imagine that in the time since Celebration to now that they've done a whole new trailer again. Like, it wouldn't make sense. It would just make more sense to release the one they showed at Celebration. It was such a good trailer as well. So,
okay.
The one we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, the one we haven't seen, but you've seen it.
All right.
Yeah. Next time I'll go live. I'll see how it is. Anyway, last bit of news, probably my favorite bit of news for this week was our Pokemon Go news. We're going to do our Star Wars Pokemon Go podcast. John Boyega is playing Pokemon Go, and he caught himself a Pikachu.
Whilst on set.
Yeah,
and he became became the most popular person on set because he caught a Pikachu.
So, all right, so the story goes, he was in Boston a few days ago, and he thought there was a fight going on, and people were crowding, and he's like, what's going on? And they said, oh, just playing Pokemon. So he downloaded Pokemon Go, set it up, he's currently level 5 on the app, so he can finally pick a team, and apparently his combat powers are looking pretty good on the different Pokemon he has, so he's ready to go do some battles at different gyms. I don't know what team he's on, but he caught a Pikachu on the set at Pinewood Studios while filming Star Wars, and just looking at the way they quoted him, you got to understand, he said, I told everybody, and everybody's in all caps, that I got a Pikachu. I was the most popular kid on set that day. And I will tell you, when I first caught my first Pikachu in Pokemon Go, I was very excited. Danya, what level are you right now?
I am level 20 right now, but I do not have a Pikachu. They're really hard to find here.
You know, it's weird. Like, I had a bunch of friends over this weekend, and like I said, there's Pikachu that pop up in my backyard. I've caught one, like, 5 minutes before a bunch of people started showing up, and they're like, really? I'm like, just open up the app, and a couple showed up that night, later at night, so that was kind of cool.
So,
they're in my backyard. That's where everyone needs to come to.
So I don't know. I've got a couple of, like, I caught a Pidgeot today. I was literally just walking to my car, and as I was walking to my car, a random Pidgeot showed up. And I was like, wow, okay, usually I just catch Pidgey. that's interesting, but trying to see what, like, I don't really have anything, like, super rare. I got a Porygon that hatched from an egg. That was pretty cool. What else did I get that's been
Martin, are you
cool?
Playing Pokemon Go too, or no?
Are you kidding me? I only got time for so much in my life. I can't let this thing take over my life. I need to sleep at night.
As he's level 35, past us all. I'm only 19.
Sleep's totally overrated. I caught a Magmar at San Diego Zoo.
I had one of those hatch myself. Ooh, what just popped up? I opened it. Ooh, yeah! Yeah! Caterpie. There we go.
Hey,
just
now,
caught him.
A Weedle just popped up for me, but I'm currently collecting them because I found that if I just get a load of Caterpie, Weedle, and Pidgey, and I just get as many as I possibly can and hoard all of the candy, what I eventually do is just shove a load of the eggs that I've got from Pokestops into incubators, and then right as they're all about to hatch, pop a lucky egg, and then basically
start evolving. Yeah, that's why I'm only level 19. I have quite a few Weedle and Pidgeys right now. Although I'm out of Pokeballs. All right, anyway, we're done with our Pokemon Go podcast, everyone.
Are you sure? Because you can keep going if you want. I'm not going anywhere.
Hey, you know what? John Boyega himself caught a Pikachu. I got a Pikachu. Although I'll tell you, I think I said this before, their combat powers on Pikachu are not very good. Let me see. They're super low. Like, the two I still have that I haven't converted into sweet, sweet candy are 128 and 90, so.
Mm-hmm. I might have to go up to Pinewood. If there's Pikachu up there, then maybe that's where I need to go to catch myself a Pikachu and go
sneak
play Pokemon with John Boyega. Yeah.
There you go. All right.
Excuse in case
maybe hitch a ride
you
on the Millennium Falcon. Who knows?
I'm not a spy. I was looking for Pikachus.
There you go. Basically, could you imagine
that's why
that
my
excuse
phone is out. I'm not taking
set
pictures. I'm looking for the Pikachu. Anyway, moving on to our spotlight topic, we have Darth Maul.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
I like this topic. I do. Darth Maul.
I like this topic as well.
I know.
I'm very excited since I popped into the dock and saw that this is who we were talking about this week. I was like, yes, Darth Maul.
All right, here's my here's a little synopsis. So Darth Maul is a deadly Sith, agile Sith Lord trained by the evil Darth Sidious. Darth Maul was a formidable warrior and scheming mastermind. He wielded an intimidating double-bladed lightsaber and fought with menacing ferocity. Though he fell in battle against Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Zabrak from Dathomir would prove to be much harder to destroy than originally believed. So I will tell you this, it took a long time for him to come back from the dead. I was a little surprised when he came back, but I am very happy that he's back and all the stuff that we're seeing now in Rebels. But we first get introduced to Darth Maul in Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Do you guys remember that very first scene where we see him for the first time? Not in person, but like just in the show, like in the movie.
It was on the holophone, right?
Yeah, it was in the hologram when the Trade Federation is talking to Darth Sidious, and they talk about how they let the queen get away. And so Darth Maul walks in. He's like, this is Darth Maul, my apprentice. I will send him. And so then he goes to Tatooine. And of course the music, like John Williams did an amazing job for this. Like, so Darth Maul comes in and it's just like, chicaga. You know, like really like menacing music, right? Right? It's like, ooh, who's this Darth? You know, this is like Darth Vader replacement. Like, he's super scary. And then like he goes there and he's like releasing all these probe droids on Tatooine. And the first thing you see him do is jump out with a lightsaber at Qui-Gon Jinn. That was like the coolest thing ever, like for Darth Maul. So what do you guys think about this introduction of Darth Maul? Nothing else, but just the introduction to Darth Maul here.
I mean, Darth Maul just in general was the coolest thing from The Phantom Menace. Like, he is by far the only redeeming quality of The Phantom Menace for me.
What about pod racing? It's wizard.
It goes no, the pod racing, Jar Jar Binks, then Darth Maul for me.
Okay, good.
Pod racing game, I will give you. The pod racing game is excellent, but pod racing in the actual film, once you realize that it just keeps turning on the same angle all the time, all the way around, and it doesn't change up the shots at all, once you notice that, you basically can't unsee it, and it just feels like it drags on for forever.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah.
Now, I remember when I was going to see Episode 1, I think Darth Maul was all over the advertising, wasn't he?
Yes. So
he was, because you did see what they kind of showed with Darth Maul for the advertising is they kind of showed his double-blade lightsaber. Like, that's all you saw. Like, it was he'd come out, and of course, like, you know, this when they go back to Naboo, he's there, you know, they're about to go one way, you know, the Queen, Obi-Wan, everyone's trying to go through, Captain Panaka, all gonna go through this door, and Darth Maul's there with his hood. And then he throws his cloak off, and then it's Saber 1 ignites, Saber 2 ignites, and you're like, oh my god, she's got this double-bladed lightsaber! Mind blown! So, that was me. When we first saw it, if you guys didn't know. He was definitely part of the advertising blitz when it first came out. It was actually more heavily when the 3D version of Phantom Menace came out. I'm looking it up right now, but I know when he came out with the 3D version, he was actually the main poster. So it was pretty interesting that they realized like he was the coolest part of, you know, Phantom Menace.
Oh, absolutely. If they didn't know that going in, then they're fools. Fools, I tell you. But no, they focus on him for a good reason, because he looked menacing and really cool. I mean, compared to the other Siths that we've seen at the time, Darth Sidious and Darth Vader, Darth Maul looked like a totally different beast, for lack of a better word.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. You know, he's this new character. So, you know, first of all, let's take a step back real quick. So Darth Maul, unlike Vader, is not covered in a bunch of armor. And unlike Sidious, he's not, you know, we knew, at the time Episode 1 came out, some people knew that Sidious was Palpatine the Emperor. Some people did not know that. You can actually go use the Wayback Machine. You can see forums talk about, you know, that Darth Sidious can't be Senator Palpatine just because they share the same, you know, they share the same name, but they have different names. You know, who knows? So people did not believe it at the time, but you know, Darth Maul has these horns. You know, he's a Zabrak, and he's got these horns, and his face is all tattooed, and he just looks menacing. Like, I'm looking at him. Plus, Ray Park, I don't know if you guys remember him, was in X-Men. He was Toad, and he's just this awesome martial artist. So, he did a phenomenal job portraying, you know, Darth Maul in the film as this, just lack of a better word, a badass. So,
yeah, and he was at Star Wars Celebration as well, and he did like some kind of demonstrations and stuff, and he was pretty damn impressive. Like, he's just so cool. Everyone who's like involved in some way with like bringing Darth Maul to life is just really cool.
Who else brings Darth Maul to life? Danya?
Sam Witwer.
So, yes. Sam Witwer does the voice of Darth Maul in both the Clone Wars and in Rebels, correct?
Yes. He makes my knees weak. He's great.
Uh-huh. I wonder why. Yeah, all right. So here is the link. Experience the first time. Experience Star Wars Episode 1 the first time in 3D. Here's a link so you guys can see it. But I'll link this so people can see it. But yeah, if you look at the poster of Darth Maul for Episode 1, he is, especially for the 3D poster, he is dead center. Light, double-bladed lightsaber going across the entire screen. Again, pod races are also in it because those are the other cool parts of the movie. But yeah, it definitely, he...
God, that's such a bad poster. Sorry.
Anyway, you know, here's the thing is, though, he brought something different to the franchise. And I think I will say when they kill him off in the movie, it was something that the entire fandom, I felt, was like, what happened here?
Yeah, you kill him, but you leave Jar Jar Binks breathing. What's going on?
Well, you know, here's the thing is, in hindsight, you know, when I saw Episode 1 for the very first time, I was young. I enjoyed Jar Jar. I enjoyed, you know, Darth Maul and everything. I kind of wanted Maul to come back in 2, but obviously he didn't at the time. But it was kind of cool just to see that battle at the end. You know, he fought off Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn. And, you know, until Yoda's fight with Count Dooku in Attack of the Clones, I think that was my absolutely favorite fight that I have seen on screen in almost any movie. Just because there was everything from, not only was he just fighting two badass Jedi, but there was everything from force pushes and force jumps, and they were using the force in a very different way than we had seen in previous movies or anything like that. Plus, it was just super high action, and there was an amazing score behind it. Like, it was just, I thought it was probably one of the best things. I will say I am glad that they're not doing the same thing with the new films. You know, the new films, the fights look a little bit more raw. They don't look as almost choreographed. But at the same time, you have to remember these were three powerfully trained Jedi and Sith.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
So it's okay that it looks almost choreographed because, you know, if you've ever seen anyone actually fight, you know, there is the raw when someone is not trained. But at the same time, it's like it almost looks like a dance when they're both at equal level here. So I absolutely love the fight. So,
but that fits in with Darth Maul's character because he grew up like very agile and being an acrobat, and he's going against these two highly trained Jedis. So, I mean, it shouldn't be raw. It should be very precise, you know?
Mm-hmm. Be very precise.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Whereas like everyone else through the series has barely any training at all. So they're working off instinct. Luke worked off. He had very, very little training.
I know. He went before Yoda let him. Yoda said, "You're not ready to face him yet." And of course, he went off because, you know, he's Luke.
So for both him and Rey, like, they work a lot off instinct. And for Rey, she also calls upon the really scrappy style of fighting that she had to use on Jakku in order to survive as a scavenger. So she incorporates that into her fighting when she finally gets to use a lightsaber. But, you know, I would expect that it would be very, very different. And it's beautiful. The scene, the fight scene at the end of Phantom Menace is gorgeous. It's stunning. It's still one of the fights that I enjoy rewatching. I just don't tend to rewatch it in conjunction with the rest of the movie. I just watch it in isolation.
Can I just say about that fight scene, my favorite part, when they're going through those, I don't know what they are, there's the red energy gates, things, whatever, and they all get separated, like, you see what each individual character is doing. Darth Maul paces back and forth, and Obi-Wan is very nervous and trying to get in there, and Qui-Gon Jinn just sits down and starts meditating, like, to try to get back in touch with the Force. It's so cool!
I will say. All right, so you know what? So here's something else. If you ever time those, you know, those energy fields opening and closing, I don't understand how, with all the force power and everything Obi-Wan has, how he doesn't make it all the way across to the last one by the time it closes again. I don't get it.
He's not a master yet.
It doesn't matter. The time, like, I sat there with a stopwatch even at one point. It's so wrong. Like, the timing just doesn't make sense. He should have made it all the way across. Qui-Gon should have never died. Sorry.
I'll agree with that. Qui-Gon gone too soon.
Yeah.
Qui-Gon too soon.
It's like Qui-Gon fishing.
Qui-Gon, anyway, not forgotten.
Oh man, I think that's the name of the episode. Anyway, but yeah, like, I don't know. It is kind of cool to see, you know, Darth Maul feeding his rage, you know, seething back and forth, waiting for them hitting the energy doors. Qui-Gon meditating and Obi-Wan still be like, okay, I can do this, I can go, and then he doesn't make it, which. I don't know. That's a whole nother topic for Obi-Wan Kenobi another time. But moving on from episode one, obviously at the end of it, Obi-Wan does end up defeating Darth Maul by cutting him in half. And you see his two parts of his body fall down energy chute, garbage chute. What is that on Naboo at the palace?
It's supposed to be a garbage chute, right?
I don't really know.
Get picked up by like a garbage freighter and taken to the outer rim.
He got moved to the outer rim through the garbage, but I don't know if it's because he crawled his way there or if that was actually a garbage chute. That's a lot of protection, you know, those energy shields, if it is for the garbage. But I guess it is the palace garbage, so that's probably...
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, it's there because there's no handrails or anything to, like, stop people from falling in there. So they've got to have some health and safety in space. Like,
yeah, they use energy shields that open and close at random periods of time. Yeah. And not consistent intervals because, you know, that doesn't actually work out. So, all right. So anyway, Darth Maul gets cut in half. Oh, I'm cutting two. And... he shows up, you know, I can't tell you how chronologically, probably 10 years later, because it's, you know, from episode one to between episode two and three. So about 10 years later, in the Clone Wars series, and as my favorite and least favorite version of himself, which is Spider Maul. Like, it's the coolest looking Maul ever, but he is so crazy that it's just like, yeah, Spider Maul. No, and it freaks me out. Like, I rewatched the episode before we did the show, you know, his story arc on Clone Wars, and it's like so creepy. His horns are grown and they're super, like, they're just.
Yes, I've been keeping his horns trimmed.
I know. He just generally looks insane with these, you know, these eight spider legs. Living on this planet of Lothal Minor, you know, junk planet, where his brother comes to seek and find him. So what do you guys think about him returning in Clone Wars? Like, not anything else about, you know, the story arc or anything, but that they bring him back.
I mean, I was glad in a way that they brought him back, because I felt like his story was cut off far too soon.
Whoa. Oh man, there's so many bad puns in this episode. It's awesome.
There really is. It's great. No, I did think that they kind of just stopped everything that was interesting about him, and like, he was a character that they could have done so much more with across the movies. I kind of understand why they removed him that early on, because obviously they needed to be able to set it up to allow Anakin to step into that spot instead. But at the same time, he had so much more potential. So while I had up until that point never thought that we would actually get to see him again, when he did eventually show up, I was really glad, because I was like, yes, okay, I can suspend belief enough to believe that he survived that and has come back as a giant spider, of all things to come back as. But also, it's just really interesting because I felt like there was so much more story to tell with him. And as we know now, there was a hell of a lot more story to tell with him because he is still around. But yeah, I was glad, surprised, and in a like a really unexpected way, but glad, really glad, because as we know now, there was some good ground to cover with his story, both backstory and moving forward as well into Rebels.
And you know, and so I do want to cover Clone Wars just a little bit before we jump into the Rebels one. And I think the Rebels one is probably where we want to spend more of our time. Just because I will say the story arc of Maul in Clone Wars is pretty cut and dry up until what happens before he disappears again. But those who don't know, basically Darth Maul was found by his brother, Savage Opress, who's another Zabrak, but yellow instead of black and red. Yellow and black instead of black and red like Maul. And when he finds Maul, Maul has one thing on mind, revenge. Revenge on the person who cut him in half, which is Obi-Wan Kenobi. So at that point, they're greeted together. They move together to go ahead and defeat, you know, to attack Obi-Wan and take revenge on him. So much so that as soon as Savage Opress finds him, Yoda has the feeling in the Force that Darth Maul is back. So Obi-Wan knows about it. And of course, Maul and Opress end up fighting Obi-Wan Kenobi along with Asajj Ventress, and that's where the battle continues. And of course, no one actually wins. It's kind of almost a stalemate here in this initial meeting between the two of them. And it's really interesting the fact that Obi-Wan is now 10 years older and Maul is 10 years crazier with no legs, and they literally are at a stalemate. Like here, there's not really. You know, there's not really any clear defined winner. They both had to kind of separate. You know, if anything, I feel like Kenobi got more outmatched. Like, it wasn't like he'd lost. Like, he didn't get cut in half like Maul did, or he didn't get hurt, didn't lose a hand or anything like you would expect in a Star Wars film. But he did retreat because he knew he couldn't win. So what do you guys think about Maul kind of having this upper hand, if you will, to Obi-Wan?
I think, if anything, it's probably just due to it's probably just due to Darth Maul's determination and the power of his anger. As in that scene, he keeps taunting Obi-Wan and trying to incite his anger and everything. It seems like he's kind of more in control of his emotions and more in control of his anger. And, if I were guessing, that's probably why he prevailed in that battle. Obi-Wan was just not prepared. And plus, he had his brother backing him up, you know? It's like a cholo covered in face tattoos. He's got his brother for backup.
Mm-hmm. No. Danya, any thoughts on that? No?
No, not really. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that he would have the upper hand almost, because the raw strength of his emotion is what powers him. And the fact that he's so filled with almost hate in order to get his revenge that it doesn't necessarily blind him, but it pushes him further and gives him almost this unbelievable strength in order to push through everything. So the fact that he gets the upper hand quite a lot is not particularly surprising and also makes a lot of sense. So, yeah.
And it's a great way to use that character too, because he is such a cool character, and with the handful of minutes of screen time he gets in episode one, just seems like a waste. Can I add one slightly off topic thing before you move on to Rebels?
Sure. Yeah.
When he battles the Mandalorians, I think, and he gets that darksaber, mm-hmm. that darksaber is the coolest thing I have ever seen out of that series.
You know, I will say this, and it's actually interesting. So actually, what I was going to go to next. You have something, Tanya?
Back again. The Darksaber is back. Tell it a is. Friend. It is back.
It is. And back, it's actually. It will be.
Yeah, it was in season 3 trailer.
Yeah, it was in the trailer with, what's her name?
Sabine.
Yeah, so that saber comes back, makes its way into Rebels. But just to talk a little bit about the Mandalorian group, you know, Maul works with the Mandalorians, Death Watch specifically, to kind of take back, you know, some of their ground and everything. And of course, they eventually turn on him, and that's when he is confronted with Darth Sidious, and him and his brother have to face, you know, the Emperor, Darth Sidious, and of course, Sidious is just an awesome swordsman, takes out Savage Opress, and what we think happens again, kills Maul. Again, Maul likes to do this thing where he falls off a cliff type thing pretty often.
Disney villain death.
Yep. Yes, it's like Mace Windu. Just because he fell out a window from way, way up in the sky doesn't mean he's dead yet.
Did you see a body? Yes.
Nope.
Then he's not dead.
Body, it's not dead. He's not dead yet. So So and it's interesting also to think about Palpatine didn't know that he didn't kill Maul. You know, considering his former apprentice, all these things. But that's another topic for another time. But yeah, so Maul does end up having a Darksaber, which is what Pre Vizsla had, which is an old Mandalorian weapon. And actually, kind of side note on news, yesterday was the final update to Star Wars The Old Republic. It's a game that we've talked about here on the show before. You can hear more about it on JotoCast, but the last chapter of their current expansion just released yesterday. And on that game, you can have Darksabers. So that's kind of cool, too. Ooh. Just about Darksabers. I have a white and black one, just like in the game. Or just like in the show. It's kind of cool. Anyway, moving on to Rebels, where I think he looks significantly better with two legs instead of, you know, the spider legs.
Or the kangaroo legs. And his horns are...
Yeah, or the kangaroo legs, yeah. And his, you know, his horns are trimmed down a little bit more. He looks a little bit... And, it, you know, here's the thing is, do you think his crazy horns is more art style or more... He didn't trim them down. Like, I don't know much about Zabrax. At least nothing in canon, really. With his horns. What do you think, Danya? Martin, do you think the horns were trimmed down, or that was more the art style of Clone Wars versus Rebels? What do you guys think?
If you look at his first appearance in Clone Wars, they're crazy and out of control, and then later, they're back down to a normal size, so either he's trimming them, or they retract. But one way or another, those horns are changing.
That's true.
Or if they kind of grow or shrink depending on, I guess, mental state. Like, the more feral he is and the more unstable he is, the more, I guess, monstrous he looks in respect to his horns. Like, the less in control of his emotions that he is, the more feral he looks.
So, his horns are like a tail on a cat. It goes up and gets really big, you know, when they're scared.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You can, like, don't mess with him. Look at his horns. They're out of control.
Yeah. I could take that. I could take that. Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at the fight between Maul and the Emperor right now. His horns are not nearly as crazy as they are when they first meet him with his spider legs. So it's definitely something where either he's trimming them back or something. But he looks significantly different in Rebels, and that's okay, because Rebels is taking place about, again, another 10 years, maybe 20 years? We don't really know the exact time between Rebels and Clone Wars, because we don't know exactly when Rebels takes place. We know it's coming up to A New Hope, but not quite sure there yet, right, Danya?
Yeah. So,
10 to 15 years, maybe.
Yeah, at Celebration, Filoni did say that they are very, very close to, or they are going to be coming up to being very close to intersecting with either the events leading up to A New Hope or A New Hope itself. Like, this season is going to be what you will notice, I will say, from the premiere episode of season 3. Is that there hasn't been a massive style shift, but you'll see a little bit of a change in the color palette and almost the tone of the show. And that is a purposeful thing that they've done to bring it in line with Rogue One. So because it's going to be coming really, really close on the heels to Rogue One, they've shifted Rebels to be slightly closer in visual style to Rogue One.
You know why they did that too? They wanted to cut his Aladdin hair, so the, you know, the person who plays Aladdin in the theme park didn't have to play Ezra also. No.
It was so funny because Filoni was talking about that, where he was like, you know, we introduced Ezra and his Aladdin hair, and everyone hated the Aladdin hair, and has always been like on and on at us about the Aladdin hair, and then we cut the Aladdin hair, and now everyone's shouting at us for cutting his Aladdin hair. And it's like, it's so funny. No one's happy ever.
Of course, you can't please everyone.
No.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about him and in, in Rebels. So we are literally introduced with Darth Maul in Star Wars Rebels on the last two episodes of Season 2, right?
Yes.
Yes, and he is, actually, it doesn't even reveal that it's him till the first beginning of the last episode of Season 2. Because yes, until so then, he's in this hooded guy walking around with a cane talking to Ezra on Malachor, the Sith temple
that
there.
We only know as the old master.
Mm-hmm. So the old master leads Ezra into the temple, and they are both force users, but, you know, doesn't say who he is or what he does. And it isn't until the seventh sister and the fifth brother show up, and the eighth brother. Yeah, all three of the Inquisitors show up looking for Ezra, Kanan, Ahsoka, and obviously, eighth brother's looking for, you know, Maul, and comes to fight him. And so that's when Darth Maul reveals himself and helps fight the Inquisitors with the Jedi.
Yes. And it's so interesting how charismatic he is in Rebels. Like, he's so good at manipulating a situation to work in his favor. And I think that speaks a lot to how he's survived for so long as well, that he's able to take advantage of people in situations around him in order to get the best possible outcome for himself. Maybe it doesn't always work out exactly the way that he hoped, you know, getting cut in half, ending up as a spider, you know, those are like... That's all in the past, though. This is a Maul that has learnt and has moved on from that. But just his whole personality shift coming into Rebels is so interesting, because he's kind of come over the hill of being, like, crazy and almost mellowed, I guess you could say. But not really, because you still see slivers of that Maul that was present in Clone Wars in him in Rebels, especially when he's fighting. But I don't know, I really, really love Maul in Rebels. I think he may be my favorite incarnation of it, and that's nothing to do with my Sam Witwer bias or anything at all.
So to quote Darth Vader, would you say that when he left Palpatine, he was but the learner, but now he is the master?
I mean, I would say he's probably on par with some of the people that we know as masters. But I wouldn't necessarily say that he's probably got complete ownership over the Force or anything like that, mostly because once he's got to that point, he's basically self-taught. Yes, he spent a significant amount of time as an apprentice, and therefore he knows a lot more than Kanan or Ezra does. But I wouldn't necessarily say that he was a master in the traditional sense. Mostly he's a master in respect that he's the only one with a significant amount of knowledge in order to be of use to someone like Ezra as a teacher over someone like Kanan, even though they're on differing ends of the Force. Because there is no one else other than, like, Vader and the Emperor. I wouldn't necessarily say that he is a master in the same way as the Jedi Order were at, like, their peak. But in respect to what we have right now, yes. In comparison to the other Jedi that Ezra has at his disposal, yes. yeah, I would say Maul is a master in comparison.
So the reason why I want to bring up this idea of master real quick, when Darth Maul was questioned by Ezra why Maul wanted to help Ezra out when they're on the Sith temple, Maul considers the Sith his enemy. So Maul is not affiliated with the Sith. He may not even take the title Darth anymore, which is a Sith title, but you know, that's besides the point. So he considers the Sith his enemies, because they had taken his mother from him and killed his brother, which Palpatine did that, in addition to casting him aside. So Maul was obviously cast aside in favor of Darth Tyrannus and later Darth Vader by Palpatine. So Maul further revealed that he has long since forgotten his birth name and later revealed that he discarded the title of Darth to simply become Maul. So he has discarded this title, at least he has, even though Kanan refers to him as Darth Maul. You know, so he does not see himself as Sith. And the reason I bring this up is it's really interesting because we know Darth Maul, or Maul, doesn't see himself as Sith. So he has something against the Empire. But he doesn't see himself as a rebel. He's this kind of third faction that is very, very powerful in the Force. Maybe not a master in the traditional sense, but definitely has the knowledge of it where he can teach someone. He wants to take on an apprentice himself. So he does want to be a master. This really sounds a lot like someone else we know in later films. No? You guys agree? Don't agree?
I got your back, Mikey. I totally agree.
Okay, yeah. There we go. It sounds like it's leading us to, you know...
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I agree to an extent, but we've seen Snoke, and he looks nothing like
this. I'm not saying he's Snoke, but this is... He's leading someone. He wants an apprentice to take over for him. And his apprentice is Ezra is Snoke.
Oh, so anyway. Ezra is Snoke. Okay, yeah, no, okay. Fine.
See, but, I'll get to that. You know, it's Ezra is Snoke, because I mean, I'm going to put my money on that.
Yeah, but funnily enough, the we're looking at someone in this sort of middle area, that they're not quite Sith, and they're not Jedi either, is actually a very interesting point that you should hold on to while you are watching the premiere episode, because there is another character introduced in the premiere episode that may fall somewhat in line with that thinking.
The Bendu. Anyway.
The Bendu.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
I know. Anyway, moving on back to Darth Maul. So, you know, this is where he is. You know, he tries to convince Ezra to be his friend. And eventually he turns on not Ezra, but Ezra's friends. He turns on Ahsoka and Kanan, specifically Kanan. And he so far injures Kanan. He actually blinds Kanan, telling him that he is going to be Ezra's new master. And at that point, it's interesting because when Kanan finds this out, I feel like Kanan taps almost into the dark side, because he's been told already once that Ezra's going to fall to the dark side. And he doesn't believe it, and Ezra uses everything he can to fight back Maul. So I will say it's interesting to see the attack between Ezra, or not Ezra, between Kanan and Maul, and kind of how Maul is not just using his lightsaber skills, but also, you know, the mental game that he's playing with Kanan while they're fighting. You know, he's attacking on multiple fronts here. That's not something he did in Phantom Menace. He was pretty quiet the whole time during the Phantom Menace. Maybe a grunt here or there while jumping.
I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing, considering some of the dialogue in Phantom Menace, so...
I'm a person, and my name is Anakin!
God, no!
Are you an angel? I heard about the space pirates talking about it. Oh, man. Oh, Anakin Skywalker, God. You are the smartest kid. Anyway. So, Maul, obviously, he does escape at the end of the episode in Darth Vader, specifically TIE Fighter. So he stole one of it, or just an Inquisitor TIE Advance. You know, he flies away. So we know at the end of Rebels that, you know, Ezra has gotten a Sith Holocron, thanks to Maul helping him out. Maul has escaped and is still alive and has Ezra in his sights to be his new apprentice. Kanan is hurt because of him. Vader may or may not have killed Ahsoka, but obviously that's a different topic. And so Maul is going to make a comeback, obviously, in season 3. We've seen him show up. And yes. Danya has alluded to it a little bit. Do you think he's going to be a big part of future? You know, do you think he'll play? Like I said, I personally feel like Ezra can definitely be Snoke. And that Maul plays a big part in that. But do you think Maul is going to play that big a part? Or is he, you know, they're just using him until, you know, he eventually dies? What do you guys think?
I actually got the chance to interview Sam Witwer at Celebration, and I actually asked him something almost along the same lines in respect to how he sees Maul playing out in the next season. Because I kind of said, obviously, Thrawn is going to be the big threat in that he's going to be... Thrawn is going to be the opposing force from the outside. So he's going to be coming at them with deadly force, kind of like from all fronts. But yeah. Maul, on the other hand, will be a force that could potentially drag them apart from the inside. And I kind of tried to get him to talk a little bit about how he feels Maul is going to impact season 3 in that regard, because I think there's a lot of mileage that they can get out of that. Because whereas Thrawn, as a villain for season 3, is going to be the big bad, we know he's going to be the big bad, and he's going to be a hugely damaging to the rebels and to the crew of the Ghost. We know that. We know that just because it's based on what we know from the books and what we've seen in, like, the trailers already. But Maul has almost a more intimate way of tearing them apart. And I almost don't know which one would be more devastating, because, yes, Thrawn is a huge threat, but Maul has the potential to do more damage in a more emotional way, because it's ruining those relationships. That's where Maul has the potential to do his worst. And I think that's absolutely fascinating from, like, a character level. So he wouldn't expand too much on that, but I did get a little bit from him, mostly smiles. So
you're sure that's, you know, I think you wanted the smiles. I'm pretty sure you were sitting down because, you know, weak in the knees on that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. But, uh-huh. You know, Sam. Honestly,
hi,
I think
Danya, how you doing?
You don't sound anything like him. Just stop.
I know.
That's terrible. Just not. But honestly, I think there's a lot of mileage that they can still get out of Maul as a character. So I think that even though there's a bulk of season 3 that's going to be dedicated to Thrawn, because they can't not dedicate most of season 3 to Thrawn. It's Thrawn. You know, it's a given that we're going to spend a lot of time with him. I still think in simmering in the background, Maul is still going to be a big piece of this season. And I did get to see a clip of something that happens a couple of episodes ahead of what I saw. So
now this
something
is coming
from
out.
A little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's telling us she sees it. We guess all over.
So
bit
I've
more.
Seen another clip of something from Rebels that is basically a huge, oh my god, moment that is going to very massively affect the crew of the Ghost. So he's not down and out, despite anything. There's a lot that they can do with him. And there's one thing in particular coming up that I'm just like, oh, I want to talk about this so badly in respect to, like, Maul's character, but it needs to be seen. So. Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. I do think Maul is going to be pivotal. Very important. Again, can't say it. Maul's gonna be very important in the downfall of Kanan and Ezra. And when I say downfall, it doesn't necessarily mean their death or anything. It just means the downfall. Because remember, if we're getting close to A New Hope, at the time of Luke Skywalker destroying the Death Star and Empire Strikes Back, just a few years after that, he is the only Jedi around. So that means Ahsoka's no longer around, Ezra's no longer around, Kanan's no longer around. Like, at that time, like, these characters that we're talking about in Rebels, something tragic has to happen to them. And I feel like it's not going to be the ghost characters are all gone, but it's going to be specifically, Maul is going to be directly related to that specific group of people, to Ezra and Kanan. And he is the perfect foil for them. You know, you have these budding Jedi helping out this newly formed alliance, this resistance, you know, this new, you know, rebel alliance, if you will. And they're kind of people who are leading them have these Jedi in their, in the, you know, in their pocket, these extra, I guess, without using the Jedi as a weapon, but these extra extraordinary people. And now you have this third force that's not the Empire, that's not the Rebel Alliance, literally wanting to tear them apart. So, and I'm not saying anything because I don't know what Daniel's talking about. Lucky. But, you know, it definitely see Darth Maul being that type of character, you know, being the master who wants to take Ezra and tempt him to the dark side. And also, we know that only people who've used the dark side and Sith apprentices can open up a Sith holocron. And guess what? Ezra can open it up. So that's kind of cool. So we definitely know Maul is scheming in his own way. Any other thoughts on Darth Maul, guys? We covered all his appearances in the movies and the shows. We did not talk about any of the books, just because I don't know if anyone has read them. If you have read them, let us know what your thoughts are on Maul from those books specifically. But anything else, Danya or Martin, about Darth Maul or Maul?
I'm very excited to see the rest of what's to come in season 3.
Rebels looks, like I said, I showed the trailer of season 3 to my wife and friends at work, and they're like, all right, I gotta watch the show. It just looks amazing. Yeah. So, Martin, anything about Darth Maul?
I kind of agree with what you were saying, that like he has to be building towards something. I mean, if there's one lesson you learn from episode 1, it's you don't waste a Darth Maul.
You don't waste him at all. You use him and let him come back over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Unless you see a body.
Exactly. So it's a great character. And, you know, I mean, as you see his character evolve and those horns and keep shrinking and shrinking, you kind of, they seem to be totally gone by the time episode 7 comes around. So I think his character actually gets a lot of control over himself.
See, I don't know if it's Darth Maul that is Snoke. I personally think it's going to be more Ezra, but we'll see. I know they're going to connect it somehow. They have to connect this. Like, this is such a good thing for them to like want to connect the between the films and the TV series. It's just ripe for the taking. I really hope they do.
And it's not unprecedented because Saul Guerrera.
Uh huh. It's not unprecedented. I agree with them not wanting to use something like Plagueis or something like that. And I know Pablo Hidalgo said no, but they have not talked about anyone else. And, you know, all the other theories that have floated around of Snoke, other than that he is not Jar Jar Binks. They haven't shot any of the other ones down. So I will say I'm excited to see what Maul does in season 3 of Rebels and beyond. So, as always, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. My name is Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Martin.
You can get a hold of us on Twitter at rradiopodcast. That will reach me and Danya. Or you can email us at mikey@resistanceradio.net, danya@resistanceradio.net. And Martin, how can people get a hold of you?
You can reach me through Twitter at FrightPod or Facebook, facebook.com/frightfullyuninformed. And while you're there, go ahead and check out an episode of our podcast or two.
They're pretty entertaining, I will say. I like all the news facts about older horror films myself. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye now. Bye-bye now.